Morning, folks. I'm sorry. Good afternoon, folks. It's been a long day, let me tell you. Also, I may be suffering from some side effects you should know. I'm a health communication person, so I go to communication conferences. And at communication conferences, we try to improve people's knowledge about communication and disseminate information and share knowledge. This conference, you actually improve people's public health. I was just walking around the exhibit downstairs, and I ran into this one booth, and they're like, "You want a flu shot?" And I'm like, "I can get a flu shot right here." So not only am I going to leave this conference with increased knowledge about public health, but actual increased chances of disease prevention. So very impressive. So I'll claim some side effects on that gaffe there. Okay, thank you, Marion, for the lovely introduction. As Marion mentioned, Rick and I are going to do a two-part thing. We flip the order because my presentation focuses more on development and implementation of the campaigns, and Dr. Zimmerman's presentation, Rick's, is going to present focus on the results. The project was funded by NIMH. We have several folks to thank, folks who help in terms of data collection, in terms of working with the stations for PSA placement, et cetera. So we want to acknowledge those folks. So folks may know, probably do know this audience, significant health disparities exist in the HIV, AIDS, and STD area. You've probably seen some of these statistics before. A big focus in HIV and really across health areas these days is health disparities, the fact that certain groups are much more impacted by these diseases than others. And so this is the case with several groups, most notably in the HIV area, African Americans. And so those of us involved in prevention are trying to understand ways to change this, to reduce these health disparities. In the HIV area, promoting condom use and HIV testing are two of the most common kinds of behaviors that we focus on. But in the current study, we took kind of a different tactic. We focused on delaying initiation of sex. And there's a strong case to be made that that's an important objective. First of all, there also is a disparity here in terms of young African Americans initiating sex earlier than compared to whites. In addition, early sexual initiation is associated with, in a number of studies, all kinds of negative outcomes in later years, multiple partners, STDs, more risky partners, unintended pregnancy, et cetera. So if we can get young people to delay their initiation of sex, they will hopefully miss out on many of those negative outcomes. So we've done a lot of work in the media campaign area. Campaigns are an attractive tool in terms of being a community level kind of intervention. And so they can reach large numbers of people, and they kind of avoid some of the criticisms about the individual level interventions. And they also can be disseminated more quickly than other kinds of interventions. And so any campaign project, to do it well, you really have to spend a considerable amount of time doing formative work. And that's what I'm going to present today on the development of the intervention and messages at the end of the session and a little early. And I'm going to show you some of the actual ads from the campaign. Excuse me. So this was a five-year NIMH-funded study. The goal was to develop, implement, and evaluate televised mass media campaigns to delay initiation of sexual activity among both African American and white youth. Sorry. We chose two cities in the southeastern United States because of similar demographics. We chose cities that had high proportions of African Americans, Charleston, South Carolina, and Augusta, Georgia, and also that had comparable demographics, so we could use one city as a comparison for the other city. We used an interrupted time series evaluation design. In the media campaigns area, we find that a lot of the evaluation designs are not very strong. Some of the work I've done with Rick Zimmerman and Phil Palmgreen and Lewis Donahue, who was one of our original folks at UK who pioneered kind of applying the time series design, a much more rigorous design to this area. So this is what the design looks like. I don't want to spend really much time on this. Rick's going to show this up again. He's going to be showing some of the effects. But essentially what you have is you have the two cities. You collect several months of pre-campaign data so you get a sense of what's the trend before the campaign. You launch a large, intensive, high-saturation media campaign in one city but not in the other, and then you can use one city as a comparison for the other. Then you kind of flip it and run a campaign in the other city and use the first one as a comparison. So in this presentation, I'm going to focus kind of theoretical underpinnings in the message development. We use the multiple domain model as kind of our theoretical underpinnings. It's a model that's tried to integrate and broaden our theories of health behavior. The model really had two main implications for us. One was audience segmentation. Variables like race, gender, and sensation seeking were a couple of variables that stood out as really important for segmentation. Also, several of these kind of social psychological variables were going to be important in terms of embedding them into messages to try to develop messages that were going to change those characteristics. We also used the CENTAR approach developed by Palmgreen and Donahue or some of our collaborators. And the idea behind this is we have these folks, high sensation seekers. They prefer novel, exciting, thrilling experiences. High sensation seekers are much more likely to engage in a number of risky behaviors. Palmgreen and Donahue did some really innovative work showing that these folks also have different message preferences. And so we can develop messages that are more likely to be attended by and persuasive with those folks. So and so the concept here is called message sensation values. We just try to develop ads that are high in message sensation value. And so see, these are some of the characteristics of those kinds of messages. You can think of the kind of MTV, kind of fast cuts as one example of a high sensation value message, as opposed to the preachy talking head kind of thing, which is going to be low sensation value. But it doesn't always have to be that MTV style. Ads that can be very emotional, narratives, things like that can also be high sensation value. So we essentially needed a whole cadre of PSAs for this campaign. So we achieved that through two processes. One was collecting every possible PSA out there that existed currently, screening them and gaining permission to use some of those in our campaign. And the other process was developing our own unique ads. So we engaged in this large collection effort. And this is the point in the presentation where I'm going to distinguish what we're doing, delay, from abstinence only. So some abstinence only work out there, you know, is kind of based on this don't have sex until marriage idea, which was not the goal of our campaign. Our campaign was a sort of wait until you're older kind of message. However, during this process, we collected any and all ads that we could. And it's interesting, in fact, some ads were not bad, and at the end they would say, you know, abstinence until marriage, and it was really just the message at the end that didn't work for us. So we collected every possible thing that was related to delay, postponement, abstinence. We coded these on several dimensions, and essentially as a research team, we kind of decided what we thought were some of the best ads. And then, of course, it doesn't matter what we think, it matters what the audience thinks. So we did some research, getting adolescents together, showing these ads one by one, having them rate the ads on several different dimensions. Here I've got some data from high sensation seeking youth. So let me talk you through, I don't know how well folks can see this, let me talk you through this just a little bit because there's one more table that looks like this. So these are 10 different PSAs that we identified through the collection process and coding as some of the most, what we thought were some of the best ones. Across the top are different dimensions that are important. The first is perceived message sensation value. It has to do with how much did adolescents think these ads were exciting, emotional, fast-paced, powerful, things like that. The second one here is convincing. This is sort of the perceived message effectiveness item. So did adolescents think the ad would be effective at convincing them or someone like them to wait to have sex? The third one here is credibility. Was the ad truthful? Was it believable? Fourth dimension here, did it catch their attention? Would it catch their attention? Fifth one is liking, and the last one here is useful. Did the ad give them ideas they could use, information they could use, et cetera? And so you can look across here and see how each individual ad scored on these different dimensions. You can also look up and down and see how they compared. And I bolded the first three because I think in many ways those are more important in some ways than these latter three. And so you may not be able to see all the details, but you can see there's a lot of variability. And so these kind of data are very useful to trying to get a sense of what ads may be promising. And we do that, but what we also do is we break those data down by gender, by race, by other factors. Some ads are targeted to women, and so the boys don't like those ads. That's okay, because we're going to place those in programming and target women with those. Vice versa, some ads were targeting African Americans. So through this process, we ended up selecting four ads that we thought were really good and really had a lot of potential, and we got permission from the developers of those ads to use them in our campaign. And what we do is at the end of the ad, we kind of got permission to remove whatever tagline they had and put our own tagline, and so they're just a part of our campaign. 5 minutes? Okay. I'll have to speed up a little bit here. I have a little bit of time to show a couple ads, although they're only 30 seconds long. So we also developed our own original 30-second ads. The whole campaign was 30-second televised ads, so it's a television-only campaign. So we have a whole process that we go through. We develop scripts. We, as a research team, we talk about the scripts, try to make them as strong as we can. People come up with all kinds of neat ideas. Some of them we end up throwing out. And we essentially, we bring in different kinds of creative graduate students and others to help with this process. And ultimately, we take the scripts to the target audience and do focus groups with the target audience to get a sense of, well, what do they think about these ads? And the target audience helps us make them better. What should the characters be wearing, the clothing, the music, all those kinds of things. So in the end, we ended up with 7 scripts that were fine-tuned and made much, much better by the target audience, including bringing in so-called target audience consultants that helped us with final tweaks, and we produced those in concert with our production company that we work with in town. Want to show you a little bit of data. These are the same data, the same kinds of questions, but on our original ads. And one very promising thing about this is you may notice a lot of these numbers are higher than the donated ones. So we were successful in creating ads that were higher in sensation value, that were seen as more convincing, and particularly credibility. Just about all these are above 4. These are all on a 5-point scale. I should have mentioned that. All on a 5-point scale. So pretty high in terms of believability, truthfulness, things like that. I'm running out of time here, so I think I am going to just mention that we collaborate closely with the state, with the television stations. We work with them as partners. You can't just show up at the last minute and ask them to air ads to adolescents about sex. We work with them early on. We sequence our campaigns in kind of a theoretical manner. The campaigns were 3 months long, aiming for really high GRP, so high saturation campaigns, so people are exposed multiple times to the ads. And before I run out of time, I'm going to skip this because Rick's going to show this.